Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English stead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. With today's special guest.
Ed Laughlin.
Right.
Wait a minute. You're going to have to grow tremendously.
It's a very woolly Laughlin.
Both in stature, wealth, and physique.
Yes.
To be Ed Laughlin. We have here a fellow who is sitting one head lower than the rest of us.
I will lower myself. Here we go.
Okay,
here
so he's dead. Jake is lowering himself down. You would lower yourself.
Oh, Lord.
The Honorable Lynn Woolley, former owner of KTEM.
That's as opposed to the dishonorable Lynn Woolley.
No, he's over on the other. He's right in another studio.
That's a different program.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, it's always fun to be on the Personal Wealth Coach.
Well, we actually came in here and... he was in there, and he was doing the Not Ed Laughlin show earlier.
Correct.
And we just wanted him to stay around for old time's sake. We used to cohabitate the old KTEM building.
Now we cohabitate for a short moment the old KTEM room.
Well, it's room. I don't know if room, broom closet.
Yeah.
And we often reminisce, Lynn, about the days when there was a glass thing in front of us, and there was a producer's room over directly across from us, and how the mighty have fallen.
Yeah.
And
we have too.
Yes, yeah. We have, you know, and we just thought that it would be a good time to reminisce about the good old days of AM radio, because you often speak of them.
Oh, I do. I wrote a book called The Last Great Days of Radio. There's nothing wrong with AM radio. It is absolutely the greatest communication tool ever known to man. I will go to my grave loving AM radio.
So you think the Gutenberg movable print press was
not
quite up
about
this?
Internet. I mean, email's pretty good. If you think AM is better than internet.
It's all a different thing. Everything has its worth. The problem with AM radio today is that so many people don't recognize the power of AM radio. When you look at what can happen with a top-notch talk station, you know, and you get up into the big top 10 markets where they have lots of money to put into radio. Look at Chicago, for example, and look at the top 10 stations in a city like Chicago, and you'll find a lot of AM in there. WGN is still big, and WLS.
Actually, as Jake often points out, it's very hard to look at them all at the same time because they're all in different places.
This is true.
So it's better to try to listen to them than it is to look at them.
But you can look at their Nielsens, though.
Yeah, that means that we would actually have to go to Chicago. And who wants to do
that?
And
drive around and look at all those. Why would you want to go to Chicago? Oh, I know. I know. Politically, Chicago is attractive to you.
It's a right-leaning little city there.
Sure it is. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We do have a caller on 773-1400. Do we want to...
Do we dare?
Okay. Let's give it a shot.
Caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Good morning. I don't have enough money to need financial advice, but I really must have the name of that gorgeous piece of music that you start the program with every Saturday.
Oh, it's a very rare thing.
Yeah, it's not even available for purchase anymore.
It is.
Very rare things are very precious.
It is. And
why they often cannot be purchased but must be earned.
It's on a CD that's called In Remembrance by the St. Thomas Episcopal High School Pipe Band.
Wow.
And they produced it 1 year as a fundraiser. And I have searched high and low to find copies of the thing.
And places in the middle as well.
And actually what I have is a copy of the copy that I made a long time ago.
Reasonable facsimile is what you're saying you have in your possession.
I actually purchased a copy at one point.
St. Thomas is an Episcopal high school in Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. And they were I think they've got six world champion piping band awards.
Right, and they're really quite impressive. And like I said, they produced that 1 year because the guy who founded the pipe band died.
Oh.
And it's got tremendous music on it, and I wish I'd bought 20 instead of one. But
so basically what you're saying is that the piece is a composed piece by that piping band and
yes.
not by some other composer.
Right, and what they did is it's a compilation of about six or eight piping pieces that were written by their former band director.
So consider it aged scotch, and every time you listen to our program on Saturday mornings, sip with your ears.
I'm sorry, but that Lafroig is just a little bit too tough for me on a Saturday morning. It's got too much hair and charcoal in it, you know.
Yeah, you don't like scotch
Saturday
in the mornings?
If we go on a Saturday evening, we might have a shot at this.
Well, now, wait a minute. You would never... we dram in the morning when you first get up is a... As, what
that's
do they say?
Irish coffee. That's
it's,
Irish.
No.
We draw them with some milk, possibly.
Well, yes, they actually tend to pour a wee dram in their coffee in the morning in Scotland.
Well, if you send us an email, we'll get you in contact with the people that you could possibly either get permission to get a copy made or...
But it's not even copyrighted.
Right. So we may give you a copy. So just...
That would be gorgeous. I tell you what, when I send the email, I'll be sure to put in a little bit of acceptable brogue so that you know who you're getting the email from and whatnot. My name is Dallas. I'm a longtime resident of the area. I've been listening to your show just for that piece of music for about 10 years.
Yeah, I think that's why most people listen to us. The music ends and they just turn
and
us off.
And there's actually some good stuff further along. The Bells of Dunblane is on there, and it is, I think
you'll
done,
cry.
They have done a phenomenal job there. And it's just, I think it's commercial level. And I really wish they had sold it commercially, but I actually went to their band leader and tried to get a copy of it, and he laughed at me.
Dallas, you have done an amazing job of making Lynn Woolley extremely uncomfortable, because he's given us critiques at how long we've played that music in the past, and we didn't hire you to do this.
It runs too long,
so.
You know, and it's just inappropriate. And he said,
there goes my consultant fee.
And we'll never get syndicated, but who wants to be part of a syndicate anyway, right?
Well, being as I listen to Lynn's program on just as often a basis as I can, you know, it's going to be mutual because he makes me pretty uncomfortable at times, too.
Oh.
By pointing out the state of affairs that I attempt to save myself from so that I remain in a comfortable state where I can operate during the day.
It's called Texas.
You're right.
Yeah. See?
That's the comfortable state is Texas, right.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. I very much appreciate the information, and I'll be sending you an email.
All right. Thank you, Dallas. I think you may live in the wrong part of the state, though.
No, I'm dead smack in the middle, and that's the best place to be is directly above the center of the earth.
I think that makes sense.
You know, there's a lot of truth in that. We could talk about that economically, too. Okay, thank you, Dallas. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good.
And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number is in here if you would like to also join in our inanity, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Before we go any further, we have a disclosure. Yes.
I knew. I was thinking about it.
Okay, go ahead.
This guy over here, we're both wearing plaid today, so it's going to be very confusing. Is also the chief compliance officer of an organization called the Personal Wealth Coach. Ooh, same name. Oh, it's officially the Wealth Coach LLC, but it does business as the Personal Wealth
Coach. Let's not over-disclose here. We could talk about where we filed and all that good stuff.
But we have filed with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, and that's if you wanted to gripe, that's the people to gripe to.
Yep.
Don't call us. Call them.
Disclosure's done.
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah, there's these McClure guys. I'd like to disclose some things about them. I've got some problems with them. What do I do?
Okay.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I thought I was on the line with the federal government.
I think, haven't you, you have it on occasion referred to me as a large African beast.
A wildebeest?
No, a rhino.
A rhino. Right.
No, I've never referred to you as a rhino. I take you guys to task occasionally when I think you're wrong.
No,
but
it's your avatar that shows up on there.
Oh,
who comes on and takes your place on the show from time to time? But show,
yeah, right. It's
the presentation. It's not really a show because no one can see you.
You can't see the radio.
Of course you can.
But
why can't you?
But by the way,
close your eyes.
One of the nice things.
No, if you go to t-span.tv, there we are in all our video glory.
We have a show.
Absolutely.
We don't have a show.
Absolutely.
We have a tell.
I hold things up to the camera all the time.
Okay. So it's we have a tell.
Yeah. You have a show.
Which is similar to what you do when you're gambling.
This is true.
Right. And since we don't gamble, it doesn't make any difference. Anyway,
Let's get to some point here.
Let's get to the point.
I've got a good subject to start with since Len is here. We're going to start with Russia.
We've solved that, then what?
Then we can move on to Europe. I actually was going to talk about the fact that the deficit, we are effectively at the end of the fiscal year for the United States.
Uh-huh.
And the deficit was 2.9% of gross domestic product.
That's very nice.
Below where it was under Reagan.
And the GDP grew at 4.6%.
Yes.
So deficit is 2.9% of GDP, and the GDP is growing faster than the deficit.
Well, you got it, but the deficit is subtracted from the GDP.
That's right.
So,
all right. Well, and why is that the case?
Why is which the case?
The case that you guys seem to believe a little bit more than I do that we're in good shape fiscally in the country. I look at the $17 trillion debt, and I think that's too much.
Whoa, whoa,
and
whoa, you guys, where did you get $17 trillion?
Is it 18 by now?
Oh, no.
See, he's using the calculations that are officially correct.
So the debt is actually going down.
No.
It's still going up.
Debt is going up.
We need to deal with it.
All right, so what is the debt? If it's not $17 trillion, what is it?
It's closer to 9.
Yeah. It's actually, I think they said 7.8, 7.9, something
and
like that.
We've somehow paid off $10 trillion in the national debt?
Now, here's the point. When you talk about the debt and the numbers that are carried that you see in various places.
Mm-hmm. Which is what everybody else considers the debt to be, too.
Not everybody else. Because
The world
runs on a standard. And
we're not following
the
same standards
that everybody else says. Debt is actual debt held by the public. Okay?
But when you're comparing the debt to what past administrations have carried, we have to be consistent.
Let's do the math first. Okay. I follow what you said. You're absolutely correct. When we're looking at growth in debt and in obligations of the United States government.
But it's not debt. It's just current obligations.
Current obligations.
That can be changed.
That number that you quote is the current obligation.
So wait a minute. I have my house mortgage is a current obligation, I don't have any debt. You guys make me feel better.
The house mortgage is like debt held
that
by
is
the
debt.
Public. That is debt.
Now, if you look at what the government owes, it owes itself.
Mm-hmm.
If you made yourself a loan from your bank account, and you said, I will pay myself back, and I'm going to write down this IOU, and I'm going to put it up on my whiteboard or my corkboard or whatever.
But I'm not borrowing that money from anybody else, and the United States government is borrowing it from China.
Only debt held by the public is borrowed.
The debt held by the public is borrowed. The debt held by Congress is held by Congress.
And it's in the form of what? An IOU?
It's in the form of an IOU to itself.
Special treasury obligation.
All right. Then where is the money? There has to be something behind it.
No.
It can't. No. No, there has to be something behind it, or it's actual debt. There's nothing there. If I have a bank account, mm-hmm. and I borrow something out of it, I've got money in that bank account to cover it. I'm not making this stuff up out
Correct.
Of thin air.
No,
yeah.
no,
the government can't make money up out of thin air, or it can. We call it qualitative easing.
No, the government didn't do that.
That was the Federal Reserve.
That was the Federal Reserve Bank.
They did not make the money up. They added on their. They already had it in the bank.
All right, let's come back. Let's come back to that obligation.
But what happens when they try to sell those bonds and there's nobody there to buy those bonds?
Now, let's back up. There's no bonds involved.
Oh, really?
Okay. We were talking about
reading the wrong newspapers and the wrong magazines.
Well, generally speaking, newspaper reporters that have interviewed me about things to do with the economy
get frustrated like I am now.
Exactly.
But this is the point. They don't know anything about the economy. They don't understand economics 101. Let me put it this way. Let's just say, I know you have a daughter, and let's just say that you promised to pay for your grandchildren's college education.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And if you included that in your household debt statement when you went to the bank, they would think that was a little silly.
Sure.
But that's the majority of what you call the federal debt.
Now, it is an obligation.
They promise in the future, based on projections.
Okay. You're talking about Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security.
Yes. Military retirement,
GI Bill, all the things.
All it takes is an act of Congress to reverse that.
And this is the point.
It'd be a big act. But
let me put
it
this way. We know Anybody that's taken a very serious look at this knows, let's just use one example that will get a lot of emotional response from people.
This is a good one.
Military retirement system, as it stands today, is totally unsustainable. Right now, the United States Defense Department, not the VA,
the Defense Department,
pays more money by far, like about twice as much money, to retired personnel than they do to active duty personnel. Now, the VA is a different issue because once they turn 62, they're on the VA budget.
Yeah, it's the same thing with General Motors.
But the difficulty is
exactly.
Congress at any point can change the law.
There isn't a union that would block them like a General Motors.
There's only one fallacy in that.
Guess what, guys?
Congress will never change those laws because Congress is worried about Congress being reelected.
This is my point. There will come a point, and it's about 2038, plus or minus, obviously, depending on a lot of things, but there will come a point when it will take the entire percentage of GDP that's devoted to the defense budget today
for entitlements
to pay just
the defense
military retirees. Just military retirees.
Well, then it's worse than I thought. But look at all the things that we do that we hear from time to time, and there's this word called unsustainable.
Mm-hmm.
And everything we do is to kick the can down the road so it's sustainable until so-and-so is not going to be in Congress anymore. Mm-hmm. Barack Obama made a speech last week in which he virtually announced, yes, we're going to do some airstrikes, but by God, I'm going to rig this so that it's not my problem. This will last 4 or 5 years at least. Let the next president deal with
it. You got it. That's
and this is precisely...
American traditions.
Absolutely. Let somebody else worry with it.
Well, this is my point. There will come a time when we fix it. Let me give you another example.
Well,
healthcare costs, projected healthcare costs by the government for Medicare.
This isn't even getting into the
which I signed up for last week.
Congratulations.
And I'm about to.
You're alive.
We're both about the same age, which is scary because you look older.
Well, if we're the same age, we both have to be the same age.
I think you're going to argue with each other about who looks older here, then we can go to a break.
What looks older, a bald head or a gray head? I don't know which is worse.
But the point is
probably the gray head.
One of the things the Congressional Budget Office just changed in the projection of the deficit was, surprise, surprise, in the last several years, health care costs for Medicare have not gone up at the rate that the Congressional Budget Office thought they would.
Why not?
You won't like the answer.
You won't like the answer.
Because they're not going to go up with me in there either.
They basically, the controls that went along with Obamacare caused the cost of Medicare not to rise as fast, and it looks like it's leveling off.
Now, there's a tendency, Lynn, for you to hear something that we say, and it's funny because we were just having a conversation about each other doing this, and pick the part that sounds like it's arguing with what you said. And when we're talking about the obligations of the federal government.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand the concept.
The reason why we're comparing that,
right.
If you looked at anywhere else in the world, if you look at Germany, Germany does not have its own debt to itself. It's owed debt on its medical programs or its social programs. It's not on there.
But we keep borrowing because time moves ahead in spurts here. And as the time moves ahead and the obligations come due as the time moves ahead, then we have to borrow the money to meet the obligation.
You are correct.
Correct. Absolutely correct.
It is not the critical crisis among that is often portrayed.
But you can change to a different crisis. I talk about timelines, and people call my show, if we hadn't invaded Iraq, you know, we'd be so much better off. Would we? We don't know what would have happened. We don't know what history would be right now if we had not invaded Iraq. The timeline was changed. It was going in this direction. We invaded Iraq. Oh. It started going in this direction.
If you look back at history, if we hadn't invaded Iraq, everyone would have won the Texas lottery, we would all be billionaires or something. No, wait a minute. That can't be right. We don't know.
You want to talk lottery, I'll do that. You want to talk lottery, I'll do that. That's just...
No, the issue I want with the economy, it's the whole world is in a horse race. Yeah. Our particular horse happens to be way the heck ahead of every other developed nation on the planet.
If we looked at Germany and we calculated their debt the way we calculate our debt.
Theirs is huge compared to ours.
Theirs is a percentage of their GDP. We're not saying...
We're not Greece, okay?
Right,
I mean, I understand that.
We've just been saying that there's a lot of programs that we're doing that are unsustainable.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, when you hear us say that
but
the
we keep
GDP,
sustaining them somehow.
Yeah, the GDP is growing faster mm-hmm. than the deficit. If we're looking at a household and the earning power of that household is getting better and they're going into debt, but they're not going into as much debt as they're growing their earning power.
I understand. I have a $1,000 house payment. That would have been unsustainable for me when I was 25 years old. I needed a $250 house payment.
Exactly. This is the point. If we have a 2.9% deficit and our economy is growing at 4 point something, we have the ability to do what Ronald Reagan suggested, which is to grow our way out of the debt.
Now, here's the
issue. That's great. I would love to grow our way out of the debt. What I hear you guys saying, where I get a little concerned with you guys from time to time, and I don't ever nail you by name, but you know who you are when you're listening to my show.
I've been looking
I don't
for
know
myself.
That
who
that
am
is,
I?
No. Yeah, you did. All right. It's because I think that there's something in Washington that, there's a lady that lives in Washington that everybody knows, and congressmen bring her up all the time indirectly, but they're referring to this lady, and her name is Rosie Scenario.
Right.
And Rosie Scenario is when...
I've not met her before.
Rosie Scenario is the lady that is, figuratively speaking, when you accentuate all the positive, but there's other things, and you have to take it all into consideration. You guys are a little bit more optimistic about the economy than I am, because you use statistics and the debt in a different way than I do. I'm looking at the national debt as $17 trillion,
right,
and the way it's used in the newspapers and in the National Review and the other magazines I read, which are right wing conservative rags. All right, I don't read The Economist as much as you guys do.
Right.
On the other hand, there are things that you have to take into account. Number one, these obligations will materialize. And when they do materialize, you have to have...
We're going to have to deal with
them. You have to deal with them. Number two, wages are very depressed in this country.
Absolutely.
Number three, the Obamacare has two poison pills built within it, and maybe more.
A lot more.
But one,
more.
What, but the two big poison pills are the one where if you have more than a certain number of employees, you have to pay more as a company.
Correct.
All right. The other one is that I believe it's, 30 hours is now when you're considered a full-time employee Obamacare.
Yep. You are
and,
correct.
And that has caused more companies to move people to 29 hours.
You got it.
Now let me come
those
back.
Those are stupid things that government does. Now, those would be easy fixes.
I agree with you.
I think that you're missing something here, that we're agreeing with all of
we
this.
I just agreed with everything you said.
Everything
okay,
you said.
See you guys. Bye.
Now go.
I feel like a winner right now. I think I'm going to go get a high-end taco.
The reason why you feel like a winner is because there was no argument to begin with. If we go back,
right,
if you listen, you were talking about, you know, Rosie's scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Rosie wasn't involved here. If we can't look at individual issues one at a time,
yes,
and say this is a good one and this is a bad one, then we're not being impartial. When we're talking about unsustainability of Medicare or unsustainability of the Defense Department's retirement, we're talking about the same debt you are.
Well,
it is unsustainable.
Just let the union take some equity in it,
right?
Just like the unions have equity in General Motors.
This is the issue.
Who are they going to strike against?
The part of the deficit that's growing fastest is growing much faster than the GDP. The part of the deficit that's growing fastest is Medicare, it's Defense Department entitlements.
Right.
Those are growing
and
faster.
And let me tell you something else, and this to me is the 10,000-pound gorilla in the room. I read a study on this yesterday. I wish I had it with me.
I'd
bring it out. Yes, a King Kong went to the top of a certain skyscraper in New York. Anyway, all right, Obamacare... Whenever the government gets involved in things, I think you guys would agree with me, if the government pumps money into something, then you subsidize something, you get more of it.
Yep.
If you tax something, you get less of it. That's a famous Ronald Reagan saying. All right. The government is heavily now into college loans, and tuition is going through
and
the roof.
It's like you have listened to our program.
We've actually talked about that.
All right. Number two. Let's talk about Obamacare and why I think if we could repeal it yesterday at 6 a.m., it would not be soon enough. Here's the thing. Now we've nationalized health care to a certain extent. What has happened right here in Central Texas, right here in River City, that might have been partly because of that at the very least? I'm sure there were other factors, but might have been partly because of that. Scott and White is now what?
Baylor Scott and White.
I read a report yesterday about the heavy pressure of Obamacare to force consolidation of the medical industry. You want to know why you're sitting in a little tiny room now with old equipment? It's because the media industry consolidated. The big companies aren't going to buy you new equipment.
When he puts his finger up like that, he politely wants to say something.
Right. All right. So let's move back to a word that you used. Well, I'm agreeing with a lot of what you say as an economist.
No, say all.
As an economist, I have to take a point that means something economically that you said that was just not true.
Okay.
The health system has not been nationalized. I mean, when Venezuela
defines nationalizing.
Okay. All right. When Venezuela nationalizes.
It is under the thumb of the government.
Be quiet a minute.
Okay. If Venezuela nationalizes an oil company, what do they do?
They own it.
They own it. When Obamacare happened, I have lots of, you heard us just now agreeing with you, there's lots of problems in Obamacare.
Oh, yeah.
But let's be specific here. Let's talk in actual facts rather than talking about in emotion. He did not nationalize, the government did not nationalize even the insurance system, which is part of what was controlled and regulated. It's still private government or private companies. Yes.
All right, let me jump in here. Why didn't the insurance companies fight Obamacare?
Some of them did.
They did.
Look at the insurance lobbyists.
Most of them sat down at the table, and my gosh, Dr. Rohack at Scott & White.
Millions.
Helped write Obamacare.
Right. Millions of dollars of insurance lobby money went against it.
Other millions went for it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I think
the insurance company saw, wait a minute, 30 million uninsured people?
You're right.
And we're going to get policies for 30 million additional people? Where do I sign? What they did.
You are correct.
And they're all on board now. Look, I deal with Humana all the time. Maybe not much. Well, actually, Humana's been very good except for my little $5,000 deductible, which is a bit of a problem. But
not so little.
Now that I'm an old, old farts and old fartresses, don't have to worry about that anymore. You know, so I'm losing my $5,000 deductible to go on Medicare. But here's the thing. They thought they were getting 30 million new customers, and they wanted that money, and they saw it, and they're willing to give up a little bit of their own control. It's, to me, one of the biggest problems in America today, and I say this as an abject conservative, and most people that are conservatives say, how can you say that? But I believe the consolidation of America is a bad thing. I would like to have 200 insurance choices, not 4 or 5.
So what you're saying is too big to fail is not something nice?
Wait a minute.
That's shocking, Lynn. How could that be?
Well, and Richard Fisher, who's retiring now from the Dallas Fed, who is no Republican, says the biggest economic problem in America today is the fact that Dodd-Frank and the other laws that we passed did not fix too big to fail.
I really wish we had about 6 hours of continuous show so that I could tell
to
you...
To deal with me.
No,
we agree with what you're saying right now.
Listen just a second. So you would know how much I agree with you.
Wow.
But I agree with you on a far more profound level than you're even touching, okay? I even understand...
I'm only a little teeny tiny talk show host. I know nothing.
And listeners can write this down. You can write this down. About 15 years from now,
yes,
what you have just said, in every piece of its aspect, will almost certainly come home
absolutely
to roost.
The chickens will come home to roost.
And we will have an issue with too big to fail as they fail.
And why? Let me tell you what I think why. The bank that I seem to always get sold to, you know, I'm a very desirable guy, and I get sold a lot. Every time I buy a piece of property, I get my mortgage sold, and it's almost always to Wells Fargo. Is Wells Fargo too big to fail? No, it is not. Why not? Because Wells Fargo is mostly a bank. Bank of America is too big to fail. Citibank is too big to fail. J.P. Morgan Chase is too big to fail. These are banks that have vastly expanded into non-traditional services. They're very much into stocks and bonds and all kinds
of things. It's called investment banking.
Yeah,
investment banking.
You're talking about Gramm-Leach Bliley and Glass-Steagall-Axe. These are
What I'm saying is, if Wells Fargo went down tomorrow, it would impact the economy, but not a lot. If Citibank and Bank of America went down, it would impact the economy a lot. And so this
there is no idea what a major understatement you just
Well, it could crash the economy. But, how many times can we bail them out? And how? Let me ask you guys something, because this is where I think maybe I'm just stupid and I don't understand this stuff. But we went through this. We went through the situation in 2008. Mm-hmm. I have never recovered from it. I lost my salary from that recession, and I have built back up.
Where did you last see it?
Headed down the other side of the road from where I was.
You need to go down there and see if you
can find it.
Put some posters up
but
or something.
What exactly have we done to keep this from happening again?
We haven't.
In fact,
the Dodd-Frank.
This agreement is really getting my goat.
The Dodd-Frank bill was the law.
Correct.
The
we
law
have talked about this.
Has put more friction on good economy and done nothing to stop the bad parts of the economy.
Dodd-Frank was a cobbled together piece of garbage.
Absolutely.
But speaking of number
and
two,
let me tell you something. George Bush and John McCain.
Which George Bush?
The second one.
W, not H.W.
Just call him W.
These guys, actually, I found an old report from Fox News.
You found an old report?
I found it on YouTube.
Oh,
and I recorded the audio, and I put it in a file. It's 2 or 3 years ago now. At a time way back at the very first of this, McCain and George W. Bush got together and tried to get legislation written to stop the subprime deal. And they couldn't get anybody interested in it.
Correct.
You're right.
In fact, if you recall, it did get to committee. And,
right.
And a fellow named Frank talked about this. I think this is an exact quote.
His first name was Barney.
Yes.
And he couldn't say his W's exactly right.
Right.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. That was his quote. And
it all goes back to me.
That's because Barney Frank was such a conservative, he didn't want to fix anything.
There are two sources of evil in the world that are at the root of everything wrong in the world.
You've simplified this.
I just thought there was a little bit more than two. I thought there was just one source.
No, one of them's Jimmy Carter.
Oh, right. He's been around a long time. But
and the other one is radical Islam. All right? Now, you go back to Jimmy Carter, and you get the let me tell you guys something.
So what you're saying is a Baptist and Islamists are the same thing.
Pretty much. There's two sources of this.
No, I'm just two sources of where all my problems are.
Jimmy Carter is a staunch Baptist.
I sat there in 1979 at a radio studio very similar to this, only a little bigger, watching on a TV monitor the Ayatollah Khomeini come out of retirement and move back into Iran. That was on Jimmy Carter's watch, and Reza Pahlavi, got no support. If he had, the timeline would have changed again.
Otherwise known to the public as
the Shah of Iran, sitting on the peanut throne. All right, what else did Jimmy Carter do?
See, I think that was an issue. That's the issue right there.
If I had a hammer.
Hold on. Jimmy Carter didn't like that somebody else had a peanut throw.
This is
true. He likes peanuts. That's
exactly right.
This is the fundamental aspect here.
All right, look. I have this.
You're agreeing with that again.
I've got to tell you guys something. I have this hammer at home that I have in a toolbox. It's an interesting hammer. It's a standard non-graphite wooden, just regular old hammer. You know why I originally bought that hammer?
To hammer in the morning?
No. I had to hammer in the evening all over this land. I bought that hammer when I was owned an advertising agency in Austin, Texas, because we photographed that hammer. That hammer was the graphic on a billboard. Where did we put that graphic? We put it in a part of several towns trying to get people to come in and take out construction loans. We put those billboards specifically in parts of town where we were hoping like the Dickens that nobody would come in. because we knew that the likelihood of getting those loans repaid was pretty close to zero. Why were we advertising for loans
that you didn't want
in a part of town where we really didn't want loans?
I'm really interested.
Because Jimmy Carter,
you don't work for the government.
Jimmy Carter wanted to give you money if you did.
Jimmy Carter wanted banks that had been accused of redlining. Absolutely.
Which is similar to redshirting.
It's the process. You take a red pen, you take a map of the city, you draw a line around this part, not giving anybody loans from that part of town because that's the African-American part of town. Hispanic community, nope, no loans from there. Well, what the federal government failed to realize is there are African-Americans, blacks, Hispanics, Asians, whites that aren't going to pay those loans back, and there are some that are going to pay those loans back, and you have to take everybody on an individual basis. But that's not where they went. That's why we had the subprime housing problem. We had Carter puts in CRA.
Carter puts in CRA.
It doesn't have any teeth in it. It has a few teeth, but not many. The banks still have a way to get around it.
By the way, Clinton comes in. For those of you who don't know what CRA is,
Community Reinvestment Act.
There we go. When we use acronyms, we like to.
All right. I'm sorry. I know.
I thought it was Croft.
I'm thinking that your audience is a cut above. Your audience is.
No, they have to be really old.
But let me tell you something. No, in all honesty, people grab
Carter.
People who are listening to this show know this stuff. Okay. I'm here to tell you.
Everybody else changed the channel already.
No. So this got stuck in your craw.
No, if people who don't understand anything like that are watching MSNBC right now.
Do have to play some commercials.
And we have a stopped clock.
I understand that. Yes, I noticed
you
that.
You have stopped the clock.
I noticed that earlier. All right, so Clinton comes in. He puts more teeth in it
because we skipped a couple of administrations, but
Clinton came in and put the teeth in it. And it's like, we have just got to loan people money to these poor people.
Were they false teeth?
Look, I stood in the lobby of what was at the time Temple National Bank.
Uh-huh.
It's now Bank of America. Before that, it was Nations Bank. Before that, it was NCNB, which stood for North Carolina National Bank. They brought the head of North Carolina National Bank. The lady died of cancer.
No cash, no bank.
Exactly.
Right.
This guy died of cancer some years after this, but I was a young guy went over there to this ceremony. I don't remember why I was there. I might have been a member of the chamber or something. But he says, we want to loan money in your community. We want to loan more money in your community. But we want to loan it to people who will pay it back.
No way.
There's your key.
No
right
way.
There.
NCNB?
NCNB.
Then how did they go out of business?
Well, they merged.
Yeah, well, they basically went out of business.
No, they changed. Well, yeah, it moved around a little bit. But it was like broke.
Because they were only saying this after the fact.
No, hold on. You can trace this back, and you'll still find there. It's still in the same chain.
NCNB became Nations Bank, Nations Bank became Bank of America. But NCNB went out of business.
Where the CRA failed and what led to subprime was the fact that there were people loaning money based on emotion. You're a part of a community that's been depressed, and we must loan you money. But you don't really have the money to pay it back, but that's okay because there's Freddie and Fannie, and they can take it over and fix everything.
Could I inject a counterpoint?
Is this the Lynn Woolley Show or the Jeff McClure Show? I don't know.
This is Jeff McClure, and I want to inject a little counterpoint here. There's been a lot of smoke and noise to do with subprime lending. However, after a great deal of analysis as to where the derivative meltdown that was the key factor in the 2008-2009 financial collapse, the subprime lending really was a blip.
Yeah.
The major cause was Alt-A lending.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Alt-A lending is a person with an A credit rating.
These are the people that can pay back mortgages if they're telling the truth.
Who were buying second houses, promising to move into them, building
houses.
That's
like Schedule D oil wells.
And they were buying them for the purpose of flipping them. I actually went out and investigated this after I read the studies. I actually went out to Phoenix, where the worst of it was. There are literally miles and miles, at least there were, of houses there that nobody has ever lived in.
These are people that could pay it back, that lied and said they were going to be a primary resident.
Once they couldn't sell the house, they elected to stop making the payments. Now, that was the largest dollar amount. it was the key that tipped everything over on its rear end.
Now, the fact that the subprime was going on, that blip on top of the Alt-A caused an avalanche.
Mm-hmm. But this is the point. It wasn't, and by the way, another little thing, and I hate to burst your bubble here, but CRA loans actually got paid back at a far higher rate than the average mortgages got paid back. During this entire process, it was the Alt-A's that took us over the line.
Okay. All right, too much bubble bursting going on right now.
Wealthy people, relatively wealthy people who were buying a home, a spec home, getting a guaranteed, and here we go, here was the problem, getting a loan that was backed by the federal government for a second residence.
Mm-hmm.
That they never, but the second residence, they only got that, for second residence, you can't get the government-backed loan. So what they said is, we're going to build a house, and then we're going to sell ours.
But they didn't ever sell.
But they never sold theirs, and they just had the mortgage that they couldn't afford.
And sometimes they did it twice, or three times, or four times.
They had
four Alt-A houses that they were supposed to be living in, and they weren't because they stayed in their one.
I was out there at a conference, and we were in a hotel, which, by the way, it was in foreclosure at that particular moment in the Vegas area.
Was that the Vegas? Okay,
and it was in the Lake Vegas area, which is not where all the other stuff is.
Right,
and
I believe I was there with you.
The bartender there was a previous real estate agent. She said she sold the same home four times. Nobody ever lived in it, and the fourth one when she sold it,
wow,
couldn't afford the payments when they realized that when they went to flip it, the price went down. So they would have to dig in their pockets to sell the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so they just stopped making the payment.
The issue with this whole thing is that it's really easy to point a finger, but there need to be a lot of fingers because the wrongdoing was across the board. The people that were buying the houses, the people that were loaning the money for the house, the people that were getting loans that they couldn't afford, the people that were getting loans that they could afford that they decided not to.
And people making $100 million bonuses at Fannie Mae.
Well, that's a good one. We can point at that one and say it's a bait.
I agree. When the government stepped in and after World War II with the GI Bill and people were buying houses and they came in with FHA and people are buying houses and it caused a great deal of economic pluses, they carried it too far. Yes. And they carried it way too far. And they said, if a little of this is good, a lot of it is great. It's like a prescription medication. A little. So what they did, when the government steps in and says college educations are good things, but then they go ahead and they promise everybody a college education via a loan, a guaranteed student loan, that they can't get rid of in bankruptcy. The government takes these things too far because they're not a private business.
Right. Can I ask you a question?
What?
Can I ask you another one?
Another one after that one?
And they create a problem. All right.
Let's say that you and Jake are salespeople here at KTEM.
God help us.
All right. No, hold on. Just making point here. And let's say that you go out and you start selling and you come in and you're just selling right and left. I mean, just
what about in the middle?
You're going in the middle and everywhere else.
I tend to lean to the right.
Your sales manager is ecstatic. Boy, look at all these new accounts coming in and you guys get big bonuses for bringing in the accounts.
Uh-huh.
But it starts getting time to make the commercials and the people don't answer the phone calls and or they don't pay the bill after the first month and all this, but you've got your big bonuses.
Yep.
What we had in the housing market was a situation where people were making money off selling and they liked that, so they pushed the envelope a little to sell a little more and pushed it.
You're exactly correct.
Now, you can flip that around.
I did. I would like that clip. I would like to use that on my own show.
You flip that around to another position, okay? People are getting paid these big commissions,
these bonus.
By the way,
they get paid extra commissions for selling Alt-A's where they didn't think they were going to pay back because they were higher interest rates.
And if you check the people's credit too much, you might find out that's not a good sale, and then you don't get your bonus, so you just don't check it.
So this is the point. Every side of that contract was committing the same crime.
Exactly.
Including the people who are buying the houses.
The people that are buying the house that know, you know.
We're usually good Republicans, by
the way. Lots of blame to go around.
When the person is selling the mortgage to them and saying, yeah, just put that down as your income. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in order for a con to work,
absolutely,
everybody in the con has to break the law.
Well, do you remember the savings and loan crisis in the 1980s?
I
do. Exact same thing. It was that deal. In fact,
the Resolution Trust Corporation made a lot of money.
When I was listening to that guy in the lobby of the old Temple National Bank saying that NCNB, which was the new owners, wanted to loan more money, but they wanted people to pay it back, that was a direct reference to the savings and loan crisis, which had just gone by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do have to play some commercials, so let's go ahead and do that, and then we'll come back for more.
I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be much time for more, but this has been a lot of fun. And finding out that we agree with Lynn Willey.
Wait a minute, it's 16 minutes to 5.
Right.
That's the stop clock.
Right,
that's FM.
We're going to play some. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, and Lynn Willey is our guest today, and we'll be back after these important words from Town Square KTEM's consolidated sponsors. We're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And that other voice that you heard discordantly in the background was the voice of Lynn Willey, former owner of KTEM. And
you know, Lynn, we have been practicing for many decades to say our own names, and it throws us off when you say our names. I don't even know if I can say my name anymore. I'm going to have to re-practice. This is a difficult thing.
We're going to have to replay this show.
Oh, boy.
You know, next week. We are not going to be on the air at a regular time.
OU is playing UT.
Placed by this barbaric practice of grown athletes. Who are supposed to be studying in colleges and universities, giving each other concussions.
All right. Yeah, smacking each other in the face.
Come on, let me hear you guys say hook 'em horns. Come on.
I don't know anything about why one would want to hook somebody's horns.
I like steak.
Just stay away from Bevo, then.
You know, so.
We're about out of time for this hour, though. We've got another hour coming up next hour, actually. But in the meantime, if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting locally at
947. Now, this number is so I can remember it. 947-1111.
And you can also reach us toll-free, same voicemail at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN.
Again, that's so I could remember it.
And you can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Listen to podcasts. If you have not reached a perfect level of insanity, you can just listen to us for a while longer. We'll all be on medication together.
And we're in a few moments going to discover whether or not the KTEM system actually is going to bring us Fox News or whether the presence of Lynn Willey in here. Now, are we going here? We have the expert. Are we going to get Fox News? He's got a thumbs
up. Okay, thumbs up.
This is the great mystery here.
Until next hour.
Fair, balanced. Your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM. Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.